So I'm Mark Seeley, I'm director of Autograph. It's a visual arts organization focusing on photography and film based in London. And I've been doing that role since 1991, mainly through the lens of looking at three principal ideas: race, rights, and representational politics.
You know, something that I've never asked or we've never talked about, we've always jumped into different conversations, but I still don't know, like, your background of how you got into photography.
That's a very simple one, really. I did a textiles degree at Goldsmiths University in the from 82 to 85 and started doing a lot of screen printing using photography. And then, wanting to work and survive, I ended up working for a national newspaper, the Daily Mirror. In those days, it was owned by the notorious Robert Maxwell, but it was a left-wing leaning newspaper, red top, that means it was a tabloid. And I was working in the library and doing picture research and filing and very menial tasks. And then very quickly, I moved over to work for a bunch of socialist documentary photographers at that time called Network. They were mainly North London Jewish photographers working in a very strong tradition of hardcore black and white documentary work. And I was syndicating photographs for them around the world and, you know, editing and doing all the roles that a small agency, underpaid, overworked, young black dude would do in the early 80s. So I worked with them for about 3 years, and then in between then, I'd always been curating with colleagues from art school, of course focusing on the lack of opportunity for black artists as such. And photography just grew and grew and grew within the portfolio. And the focus was on then. I got involved in Autograph as a board member, saw the chaos that it was slowly spiraling down into, took the job on, and sometimes wished I'd never. And I'm glad that actually, in retrospect, I'm glad I did. And that was the beginning of the journey. So it was unplanned, unstructured, very maverick. At one point, I even had to go to the bank and borrow money, take a loan out against my apartment to keep the organization going. I very rarely tell people that, but actually someone said to me just yesterday, Jesus, you should let people know that, because that's the game of survival.
No, I mean, one thing that I find interesting about your journey is, like, you were doing this stuff like in the 80s, like super early, before all this hype around the photography from the diaspora or diversity or any of this conversation. I mean, how did you manage? I mean, I was reading that you guys had formed Black Photographers Association, that was like the inception of it. And correct, then you went from that into like a space, which I find that quite fascinating and rare as well.
We were agitating for the politics of inclusion very early in the 80s, 70s, 80s. There was lots of debates here, lots of activism. There's a long arc of serious conversations about inclusion. I mean, very important people like Rashida Rehn, Stuart Hall, you know, academics like Lola Young, really important people who were writing about, you know, race and rights and representational politics. We were doing that work. Cobbina Mercer was doing that work in the 80s. Karen Alexander was doing a course at Goldsmiths on race and representational politics. We had a funding system here, the GLC, which was very left-leaning. Very, 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 very proactive in supporting black artists. In those days, ethnic minority artists. Don't forget, the labels have changed as time has done its work. So there was a certain sense that we were tapping into or learned very quickly how the funding system worked. And as kind of citizens of the state, we were demanding a piece of the pie.
And that's the thing, I find that with a lot of movements and a lot of like institution building, the key challenge, you know, it's like everybody knows, it always comes back to finance. And it seems right that a lot of the times we have great ideas, but it's hard to find the financing. And that's sort of the big mountain to climb within it. But I mean, you managed to tap into the right financing in order to move you guys each phase.
Yeah, it's been a struggle. I mean, the word finance and, you know, black artists and African artists, in certain contexts, always been a struggle. It just has been a struggle. It's been hard to find the money. You know, we have benefited, I must say, from the support from the Arts Council of England here, but not what I would say disproportionately. Not in any, you know, it's always been in my view, we've always been under-resourced. We've always had to row upstream against the tide twice as hard as everybody else to maintain the funding levels. We've been in vogue and out of vogue. This, you know, we've been in favor and out of favor. I think sometimes I've been told by very powerful, you know, museum leaders who don't need to be named. I'm not in the business of that, but we've been told, you know, we've been irrelevant. No one needs race anymore. The issues of race are over. We've got very successful artists here. What's your problem? We've got Chris Ofili. You've got, you know, people winning Turner Prizes. So it's been, we've been, you know, through all kinds of kind of crazy cultural turns. But you're right. I think one of the key successes to Autograph has been continuity of governance, good board members, people keeping the, stopping the, you know, thing going too mad, too fast. Learning, I suppose, to, you know, a bit like a child, crawl, walk, and run at times. Trying to be strategic about where we are as the cultural turns shift. We've done a lot of work around human rights because I've always believed that the correlation between race and rights is really important. That we keep on talking about just black, the position of blackness in our thing. I think, you know, I think that the wider theatre of human rights, our right to culture as people, is really important to keep on that, to keep that message going ahead as well. It's been a kind of, you know, an entangled and often emotional journey as well. So it's keeping the politic up front and trying not to let the erosive, you know this place as well as I do, you know, this question about who we are, identity politics, and the impact it can have on your own mental health can be quite, can drive, we use the word these crazies a lot, you know, because the thing can drive you crazy. And then also trying to cap expectations from people, because generation after generation want to build the tower really quickly. And it's often, as you've rightly said, not on a proper foundation. It can be on a benevolent foundation where people give you some money, but people don't know how to put the building blocks together properly. Things fall over. I've watched a lot of good organizations and a lot of good ideas and a lot of individuals with strong will simply just make the wrong turn. And they're off track and it falls over. Spend the money wrong, do something wrong, panic, you know. So we've had some pretty interesting moments. And at the same time as well, it's not always for everybody, this fight, the longevity. I feel like I've been really fortunate. I've had one or two really good mentors, but it's not for everybody because it can wear you out. Even our own constituency can wear you out. People's, you know, I was in Canada the other day, a couple of years back, and a black artist came up to me and said, but there ain't any black Canadians in this exhibition. And I'm like, but this is a show about black Britain. You know, you get the, it's really difficult terrain. Everybody wants everything really quickly. I think we're part, you and I and Dudley and, you know, other arts organisations, people like Zanelli. And I think we're part of a long, we're in history, if that makes sense. We're making history. Carrie Mae Weems making history, Dao Bet African Americans making history. We're making change, but it's not going to happen in the way that we make it. But the most important things to do is when the window opens, when we get to a clear bit in the madness, is to make as much possible progress as we can. And sometimes that's through funding, and sometimes that's through pandemics, and sometimes that's through civil rights campaigns like the current Black Lives Matter moment. I'm personally founded, my politically thoughts are very much within ideas of post-World War II liberation struggles. That's where I kind of begin my journey in terms of thinking about what this social, cultural and political change look like. So I am very much, I know everyone's talking about the decolonial and the post-colonial. I am very much kind of, I prefer a kind of liberational struggle person rather than thinking about the colonialities of it all. I'm someone who wants to support freedom, sexual freedom, cultural freedom, movement of people, you know, just this idea that the human subject is at its best when it's feeling its most freest.
No, I mean, it's an interesting point that you bring up, and I think it also comes back down to how do you keep the movement going and still remain self-sustainable, which is always the biggest challenges, you know. Yes. And the self-sustainability aspect of it, I feel like we're not educated in it. I mean, forget in Africa or in London or wherever, but globally, when you look at the creative sector, I feel like the one thing that's missing is understanding how you can carve out something that's viable, but also at the same time having an impact on the ground, that it's not just a commercial exercise. And right now, I think in photography, there's the extreme commercial aspect of it, then there's the social aspect of it. And then in between, there's like different things happening. But even in the context of, you know, when we look at the disconnections of photographers from Africa and the diaspora, I find that peculiar in itself, that, you know, you look at African-American photographers and they're not aware of what's happening in the continent. And then the ones in the continent, you know. So there's a lot of like, how do you make the movement move forward, but also remain sustainable? What is the equation of that?
Yeah, that's an interesting point, because most people have got a very myopic eye on a prize for themselves. They want to drive themselves forward. I think very few people, which is where your work comes into play, very few people think about joining, think about making movement, collective movement. I think we have artists are, by the very nature of them, often very insular in their thinking. It is very much beginning with the word I rather than we. I think there are some people who do actually get it, and I've learned a lot from. Daoud Bey was one of them. I learned a lot from talking to Daoud in the 90s, in early 90s in America, meeting Carrie, talking about her work from a feminist perspective. You know, I think this idea, and it's interesting, isn't it? If you look at kind of lots of collectives in arts, lots of movements, lots of groups, they don't last very long, but they can be quite impactful, and people can learn in that place. So I think it's, I would say that it's both pressing and urgent that people do work together and share that space. That for me is part of a decolonizing narrative, rather than singly focusing on the individual, which is definitely part of an imperial narrative. So this idea that you have a collective body speaking different histories, different practices, sharing knowledge, dark rooms, spaces, opportunities, just looking at work, networking. We know full well that all of those successful societies are based on networks, all of those things, whether they're secret networks, you know, Klansmen, or whether they're, you know, political networks, you know, Republicans, you know, they're all very powerful because they share something and information with each other. When we're isolated, I think we're very vulnerable. And I think culturally, you know, we have been isolated. We have not been valued. We have festivals occasionally, Africa this, Black Britain this, you know, but I don't think we've been necessarily valued. And I think what we're seeing now, whether it's how long it's going to last for, I don't know, is a certain sense of people having to feel as though they have to value what Black artist is doing. Now, that's interesting, because having to feel like you have to do it means that it's still something, there's still a problem there, rather than just doing it and making it work because you value it, right? Do you know what I mean? So it's like people feeling as though they've got to put these actions into place to catch up with something. I think once that all becomes normalized, if it ever becomes normalized, then we're in a place of like, okay, now we're at the table with parity. Now I'm not going to look around the room and just think, oh great, I'm at the party, I'm one of the few Negroes in the room, right? It's like, you know, so I think that's, it'd be really nice to go to a cultural institution, say like the Tate, one day, and everybody in there is like a Black person running the ship. That'd be good, wouldn't it? And it was just getting on with its modernisms and its postmodernisms and its, you know, Picassos and all that. It'd be lovely to be free.
Yeah, I mean, that is what we aspire towards in whatever piece of the pie that exists. And I think that, I mean, it's quite interesting, all these comments that you have made. And I always find that even though we're having the same conversation, we're in different spaces. And then it comes to a point where like, okay, instead of the space or the geographical location being the marker for the validity of the work, I've always been pushing like the work needs to be valid, you know, free of these boxed in systems that exist. And ironically also, it's like when you look at the different festivals in Africa, I think these things came about out of the need that, okay, since we can't go out, let's bring everybody in. Look at Dakar Biennale, look at Lagos, even, you know, for example, Addis Photo Fest, all these different events. This has been the way that Africa is trying to reframe it or to have a different conversation, to the point where I think that these, I mean, for me, we met in Bamako 2007, and I'm telling you, that was the beginning of my career, honestly. Yeah. And that introduced me to like a whole different market. That, imagine, I was living in New York, which I didn't have access to that market, because in the States, at that time, one of the challenges is getting work. You know, either you're shooting for a Black enterprise, or you're doing Ebony or Essence or whatever. These were sort of the models. And then if you tried to break into like other kind of publications, you didn't have that same access. But I had to come to Africa in order for my work to go global, which I find fascinating. So within that, you know, when I speak to you about institutional building, the advantage that you have, I think, for like being in London is that you can find subsidization, you know what I'm saying? Or there's ways around it that incentivize.
Yes, there is a hustle you can do. There's more opportunities. And I use that word because Horace Ove, he's not very well at the moment. He's in his 80s, but he's a great Black filmmaker. He always talked about the hustle. There's more opportunity to hustle, just to keep in the mix, to not in a bad way. I don't think it's a, you know, it's not like a kind of theft thing, but just, you know, there are conversations that you need to be able to have by being proximity, closeness to change makers is really, really important. And I think, you know, there was a collector, Eric Frank, who helped us. You know, we met him in Photo London. We took a booth, and I was like, oh, Photo London's not going to be interesting to us. But we took a booth on, and he turned out to be someone who was building a collection. He met this arts organization, Autograph, and he said, but, you know, I'm collecting images around London, and I realized by seeing the work that's on display here that I haven't got any work at all around Black London. Can you help us do it? And Rennie and Eric spent a lot of time building his collection up to be much more inclusive from photographers. And he would say, I don't like that. And we would say, but it's important. And he'd go, okay. And it was like, I'll take it, I'll buy it. How much is it? Oh God, okay, I'll buy three. You know, if you're saying so, it's fine. That was really important. It's quite funny, but really important. The reason why is that he was magnanimous enough, he was bold enough to say, I don't know, but I will trust you, right? And I think that was a really important, that's not that long ago actually, maybe 15 years ago or something like that. But it was really important because very rarely do you get, like, you know, you could walk into, say, Time Life back in the day, 2008, and the picture editor wouldn't say, I don't know, but I trust you, right? It was always like, they always knew more than you. They always, you know, cultural, this sense of like, cultural authority is a very arrogant place. Especially when it comes down to what people think they know, right? And they always know more than you, but it was, and that's what we've been trying to say, is that open up the door, open up your mind, let's have a conversation, let's work with you about what you need, but we can also help you understand these really important stories from a perspective that we're absolutely embedded in, right? Whether it's around, you know, whether it's around music scenes, or whether it's hardcore stories, whether it's around, you know, Black people in urban environments, you know, Black cultures. I think it's only right that we should have the opportunity to tell those stories. That's all, right? And very importantly, if we can't tell them, we should have the right to imagine them, right? Which is where your work comes into play. You build on two sides of things, either documentary, or it builds into a kind of constructed narrative that talks to really important issues that it's very hard to kind of articulate. And I learned that through people, that whole, like, that's where the art side of the place comes into me. Not all stories can simply be seen. We can make them. So Autograph has always been I've always tried to encourage it to be a multi kind of headed hydra, right? Even in terms of its ownership. There are people around saying, I'm a founding member of Autograph, really? You mean you were in the room for a meeting one day? So it's like, it's okay, they can be that, it's okay, that's okay, that narrative's fine. Because it doesn't really matter, that truth is in their head. So, you know, and the most important thing though is that as long as the hydra doesn't start eating itself, and that's been part of the job, like stopping the beast from turning on itself, because when the chips are down, it becomes very hard for disenfranchised people to celebrate.
And I think to sort of lead up on that is when we talk about, for example, I understood where the power is especially when you jury competitions and you realize, wow, you know, when you're talking about like not knowing, a majority of the jurying I've done like in the past 5 years, it was basically me saying like, this is not right, or this makes no sense. But I understood that if I wasn't in the room, there was no clue in it. And this is where I think like in this current stage that we're in for the development of photography globally, and I see some institutions already doing this and making that change, is making sure that, especially when you're during a competition, it's so relevant to have people from everywhere. And it's not just about high academia or because you're the curator of this museum. It's not about that, but really making a selection, because those perspectives, and I've seen this with my own eyes. When I first started juring, you know, I saw that everyone has a value in their input. And the more diverse that is, the more input that you end up having and understanding what the global photography scheme is. You know?
Yeah, I think you and I have both done a degree of world press work, and we were doing it quite early on. I think I was judging world press for the first time maybe in the late 90s, and it was like, wow, this is so homogenous. This is so New York Times. This is so we speak the truth to the world. So magnum, so uninclusive, so unimaginative, so stereotypical, so Afro hostile, so South World hostile. I used to sit there and think, my God, I can't. All these broken brown bodies photographed by these white people. It's like some kind of gore fest, you know. So they've changed. It's good. Things are moving on. I mean, that's a 25-year conversation, but it's a conversation. It's still alive, and they're trying to do good things. And I'm still trying to support that. And that's also I'm also very keen to, you know, when people have made mistakes, you know, like let's just say our museums have made huge mistakes for like 400 years. I'm like, okay, as long as you're willing to change, as long as you're willing to recognize that things aren't right anymore, then I'm happy. It's when they do the kind of like, well, we'll let you in for a little while and then we'll go back to our normal selves. That's when I smell that problem, then it's in there. So I think it's interesting to help people kind of like think through their future selves at the same time. Like it's like a car journey, you know. I often say this, you're like, we can't just look forward. We have to have that rear view mirror. And if in that rear view mirror is a lot of damage, we have to still look at it, right? We still have to see it. We still have to negotiate it, because we need to know what's coming up behind us. We need to know what's left and center on those channels. But at the same time, we need to try and keep the path ahead clear. And I think that's really important in terms of driving a cultural institution forward. It's like, what, and I don't know what the future is. None of us saw this pandemic, none of us saw, but what we do hope is that it can't be as bad as what it was in terms of, you know, conversations about Black, African, South Asian, you know, global South cultural life. It can't be dominated by the Northern European lens anymore. That is being decolonized, whether we like it or not. But the point I want to come back to really is the point that you made about the work. It's really important that also we have a healthy critical dialogue about the work people are making, because if we're not careful, we fall foul to, you know, kind of tropes that sell or resell kind of Afro fantasies, never mind Afro futures, that board up, that build up, that replicate the kind of problems, because people begin to sell things they think they're doing well. So there are, I do think the critical dialogue needs to be really finely tuned. So I'm as much interested about, you know, creating a dynamic space for critical writing to develop, as well as the critical image making to develop. And I think that for me really is the next phase.
Going back to when you talk about changes, what changes have you seen like in the past 20 years? I mean, you've been at it from a critical standpoint in different ways. Are we moving forward, or are we stagnant, or do we need to change the game again?
I think this last two years has seen a seismic change. Of course, you've seen the change in terms of positions, post jobs. You've seen the change in collection policy. I'd say winding the clock back, say 10 years, that change was beginning, you know, people were having some recognition, mainly through the academy. People like Deborah Willis were, you know, employed in places. There was some visibility. People like Thelma Golden up at the Studio Museum in Harlem were doing are doing really good things. We're doing good things. So there's been like these 10-year cycles. I think we're at the top again of another 10-year cycle. I'd say in my career, I've seen three cycles over 30 years. One has been, let's give them some money because they need it. A kind of benevolent, philanthropic, let's help the poor kind of attitude. Second turn has been, well, actually, there is a kind of more tense, dynamic standoff, a kind of them and us place. Ooh, how does funding work? People being very taking and being very critical, a kind of critical entanglement, if you like. And now thirdly, there's a sense of actually, whoa, we do need to maybe stand back and not necessarily shut the door, not make it a them and us place. And a difficult, different type of entanglement now is, how do we have a conversation together? So I think we're in those kind of spaces. That includes both, you know, filmmakers getting opportunities, people like, you know, Gordon Parks Foundation existing because there's been some success, artists now being recognized through substantial Guggenheim Awards and Turner Prize, to, you know, major prizes. We've seen it just in Venice with the Golden Lion to Sonia Boyce and others. So the question is, I hope that's just not like a kind of peak of a turn. The progress would be if that kind of attitude plateaus and becomes not a turn, but part of the wave that goes forward, that brings people with it, rather than being up and down, rather than up and down. I'd like to think that the surge creates a pathway that's open for others to be able to be in there. So these are they're all political turns, effectively. Young Tyler Mitchell having the cover of Vogue because Beyonce gives him a gig is good news. It's great. It's exactly what every 22, 3, 4-year-old would have wanted at that age, you know. And it's good. He's getting paid. He's making stuff. He has a voice. I spent a little bit of time with him. It's beautiful. It's lovely. It's just such a, I felt like his dad. It's just like, that's what you want. So these are spaces. Miss Anne Harriman working for Vogue here, the first black, you know, we want to get past this idea, the first black everything all the time. It'd be nice to just look at the thing and say, wow, this is great stuff. It's happening. We have to remember what we've achieved. We've climbed through some very, very deep boggy fields, and we're getting, you know, we do come out, there is some easier path. I mean, it's just dreadful where we are now with in this time. That every time, this is a real fact, every time I felt buoyant, the economy of the global economy has really played its part. So when there's lack of money going around, this will be what, we need to watch what happens very carefully as the economies begin to implode on themselves, where we are in that space. Because back down to our key question, finance and support, when it becomes tight, people revert back to the things that they feel secure about.
You know, I always say, like, you know, you have to know your history in order to change history. I mean, this is the reality, and this is just going further back on that. But I think that the way that you've also approached it, and which I also, I mean, I wish I can reach to that level. But, you know, the fact that you make books, I find this so relevant, and there's still not enough books in the market, in my opinion.
Publishing for me is the holy grail. The reason why is because exhibitions come and go. And, you know, books tend to live a life in libraries. We're very fortunate here that if you do publish a book, you get an ISBN number and you have to deposit it at the British Museum. Just those two copies there alone are a legacy, that it exists. The people, if they're wise enough, they don't have to be wise enough. If people are savvy enough to go looking for stuff around, you know, information, rare books, they're all in our fantastic British Museum and in libraries. So for me, books are, you know, whether they're the Shadow King, that, or whether they're the Tibetan book of, you know, living and dying, you know, they're all parts of, it's, for me, the biggest thing that we can do is leave that book behind. I think that's so important. I love exhibitions. They're fantastic experiences, and they trigger all kinds of stuff. But for me, publishing what we do means that your boys can pick it up anytime, any place, anywhere. And I'm still very old-fashioned. I love the smell of a freshly printed page.
I don't think it's old-fashioned. It's just it's trying to go back to analog, which is, it still has a value in my opinion.
Exactly.
No, but because even for myself, like, I realize we don't publish enough books of our works. And I mean, for the context of Africa, the key issue is finding a good print house and to try to make that logistic happen, which still at the beginning phases here. But I've always said, like, you know, making a book of your work is so relevant. And even within that, I always find it's, you know, when I teach, you know, I tell them there are many opportunities for work. It's not just only being a photographer. I mean, we don't have enough writers, we don't have enough critiques, we don't designers. Have curators, designers, there's all these things. And that's why, like, I find you to be unique because you started inside the creative and then you just kept expanding on that. On that journey. And sometimes what I find with a lot of young people is that they give up too soon and they never flush out the potential. Like, if you want to be in photography, you have to keep pushing until you find that space that you're happy with. If it means you being a wedding photographer and you're happy with that, then that's it.
It's okay. I mean, that in itself is, you know, in time, that will be very important. The way, I mean, you know, there's no, it's what I mean, there's been no, for me, as long as, you know, if you can be creative and someone can pay you to do it and you can make it sustainable, then all good to go. But, you know, publishing for me really also became out of, if you're trying to promote people's work and you're constantly rejected, then you just need to think, well, what do I do? We'll publish, we'll do it. Instead of, we will own that. Now I think we could probably have, you know, we will be talking to people like Thames and Hudson, to people like Aperture, to people like, you know, Michael Mack publishing. To there are, I think in the last 2 or 3 years, people have been knocking on Autograph's door wanting partnerships. We don't have the capacity or the time to be able to fulfill all those potential partnerships, but I do think there is an open conversation to be had now, especially with university presses, new knowledge, new formations. I mean, for me, one of the most important books is The House of Bondage, you know, Ernest Cole's book, right?
That's somebody gave that to me as a gift, and it's like my prized possession. Yeah, but I mean, amazing.
You see, never met the man. You know, I showed the work in, had the privilege of being able to show the work in Houston for 2020. It'll still be on for 20 this year, 22, as they do that redo. But, you know, it was a privilege just to be able to sometimes just go back and think, look, 1969, a black South African in exile, right? Look at this work. Right. So I'm sorry, you know, young black Brit with your many privileges. It needs a context card, you know, even Gordon Parks. And we know that he's really famous and all the rest of that now. But his backstory is complete poverty. Right. So there are ways forward if we can think our ways through it.
What message do you have for young photographers? Because I know Each phase, as you talk about these 10 years or these different time periods, bring on like new challenges. And as you know, right now, there's a lot more photographers in the pipeline. And the sentiment that I get is that there's a specific, like being stuck to a lot of photographers, and especially during COVID, you know, especially photographers that lived off of, you know, journalistic work. But I wanted you to sort of, you know, send a message out, you know, this is what I want to know.
I think the thing is, you know, the problem with our time is that it's gone very, very quick. You know, things have speeded up, it seems. The digital world has made things so immediate. You know, curating on Instagram, for example, and, you know, people not engaging. I think my request is maybe just to really be, you know, forensic and diligent and careful about this game of representation. As you rightly said, you know, you have to know your history. If you're going to talk about, you know, documentary photography, then at least know, you know, and you're going to talk about who's been in the field, at least understand what Ernest Cole has done, but also understand what Stanley Green has done, right? You know, people forget that, you know, people like Stanley have been around. Very important, you know, commitments to areas that aren't necessarily obviously connected to him, right? I mean, Chechnya and Stanley, people couldn't join the dots together. So, you know, and I always enjoyed seeing Stanley's melancholic kind of, you know, demeanor, because he was committed to covering kind of trauma and war. And, you know, I think it is also, if we're going to be involved in the visual arts and try and speak to communities, understand, you know, what people like Zanelli, why Zanelli is important. Think about that. And also, you might not like work, but you need to understand the work is doing. So that's always my mantra. Try and understand the work you want the work to do, don't always assume that everybody's going to get the work that you're doing, because actually it might not be as great as you think, right? So, and it's about a journey, and I would say approach everything you do with a degree of kind of humility and assume that you'll always be learning.
No, that's the key thing. You never stop learning. And also the fact that, I mean, I'm not an elitist. I always say this. I'm not an elitist when it comes to work. I believe that every form of work has its space and validity within its, you know, category and what have you. And that's the thing, is that even like in the context of Africa, there's a lot of young photographers that feel that they jump into fine art photography. And I'm like, no, like you need to go step by step. Because, for example, I wanted to do fashion photography, but I understood I could never do fashion photography because I sucked in it. But then it came out in a different form to the work that I do now.
Yes, and yeah.
So within that, it's like, I guess persistence is always the key game in that. And you have to be ready for that battle as well.
Well, also, yeah, be careful of those that discover you. That's also, there's often a reason why people are discovering you. I think it's really, especially younger photographers, I talked to Tyler a little bit about this. It's like, you know, we need to make sure what you're doing, why you're doing it. And he's like, yeah, this is just me learning, and I'm happy to be in that place. So, you know, and I think that's key. And I actually think, yeah, I mean, read, for God's sake, just read that book, read that novel, read Mars's work, read Stuart Hall, read Cultural Theory, read Horror Stories, read, I think, about where your ideas might come from. Understand Road to Meet Fanny Coyote, understand queer work, understand work that you're uncomfortable with, understand, try and get your head around the things that, I used to always think, if I don't really like it, and it makes me feel really strong, like, I don't like that, think about what's going on there, because it's doing something that's giving you such a strong, well, I really don't like that work. It's like, well, hold on a minute, there's something going on there. So try and get close to the things that you're most uncomfortable with as well. And I think that does help, you know, really does help.
Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you. As you know, I talked to you for a long time, but very, super fascinating conversation. I really appreciate you really making a contribution to this.
Well, let's see it as an ongoing conversation rather than one that's ended. So chapter one, chapter ta-da. Two, to be continued. We'll let the curtains open on another time.
Right. Thank you so much.
All right. Listen, take care. Lots of love. See you soon.
All right.